I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Our discussion may raise some questions in your mind, and if any of the issues that you hear sound like something you'd like to discuss with me, at the end of the show, I'll let you know how you can connect with me. We'd really appreciate your helping others learn the tips that we share on Smashing the Plateau by sharing this episode with your colleagues and friends, and a review on iTunes will help others find the show. Ultimately, we really want you and others like you to succeed in business and in life. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Joe Sanok. Joe is a speaker, mental health counselor, business consultant, and podcaster. Joe has the number one podcast for counselors, the Practice of the Practice podcast, with interviews with Pat Flynn, John Lee Dumas, Chris Ducker, Rob Bell, Glenn Doyle Melton, and J.V. Crum III. Joe is a rising star in the speaking world. Joe is a writer for Psych Central, has been featured on the Huffington Post, Bustle, and Yahoo News. He's a keynote speaker, author of 5 books, and is a top consultant. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
It's great to have you on. So let's talk a little bit at the outset about this issue of a business plateau. So I know that you help people who have practices who may or may not have great skill in the business aspect of their practice. What have you seen in the people you work with, or maybe you've experienced yourself, around business plateaus?
Yeah, so I think that a lot of counselors that are thinking about starting private practices, and even just anybody starting a business, oftentimes has specialized skills in a specific area. So for me, most of my consulting clients are counselors. They're people that own small businesses, coaches, people that have more of a service-oriented business. And so many of us jump right into like agency work fresh out of graduate school. And so we don't necessarily have any really business principles. And I think there's a lot of limiting beliefs around how much money we can make, about how much impact we can have. And really, we go into this mindset of we always have to work for someone else. So for me personally, both of my parents worked for the school system. My dad was a school psychologist. My mom was a school nurse. Both of my in-laws, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, both worked in the schools. So all of the really important adults in my life worked for somebody else. And so even thinking about starting my own business on the side, let alone leaving my full-time job to start a business, was such a mental plateau for me that I hadn't even really considered until probably 2009 when I launched mental wellness counseling as a side gig to pay off student debt.
Wow. So how did you overcome that mindset block?
Yeah, I think that for me, it started with just trying something on the side. And so I started mental wellness counseling. It started to grow. I added some clinicians to the practice. And really, for a long time, it was a side gig. So my first plateau, I think, was even just starting the business. And so I got that going, started to learn a little bit about business. But then I really think that I had to shift into that I wasn't going to get paralyzed by perfection and that I was just going to get things done. And when I really started to realize that I didn't have to have a perfect website, I didn't have to have a perfect sales flow, I just needed to take some action that was going to move the needle forward instead of getting so worried about how I looked to the world, that's when I really saw mental wellness counseling start to grow. And then as I learned those techniques, I think the next plateau that I kind of went on to was just deciding to leave that full-time job. And that was a multi-year process where I launched this kind of consulting business and a podcast, and that started to grow. And that next plateau for me really was, well, how do I decide to leave my full-time job? How do I plan for that? My wife stays home with our daughters. And then I kind of discovered a few techniques that worked really well in that process to smash through that second plateau.
Let's actually go back to the beginning, this issue of perfection. That's an issue that a lot of people struggle with. Talk to me about what was going through your mind when you were trying to be perfect.
Yeah, so I think that what often happens for most of us, you know, we've been through college, we've been through grad school, we've worked at a job, an agency, we have to do presentations. All throughout our early childhood, early adulthood, even kind of midlife, we work on something until it's polished, until it's perfect. You hear that all the way through that, you know, I'm going to revise and revise and then turn in that paper in college, or I'm going to revise this presentation. You just got one shot at it. And so, so much of what we're taught as professionals is that you polish and revise, and then there's this moment. And, you know, we see that in the movies where there's that pivotal moment, but really business isn't like that. It's really observing and adjusting, observing and adjusting. And it's more of an experiment. It's more of kind of an ongoing process than it is that there's these big moments that arrive. And the real kind of entrepreneurs that make kind of major steps forward, I think, are the people that are iterating at every single phase and say, how do we make this better? How do we listen to our audience better? How do we listen to our customers better? How do we add new products that meet certain demands that we're seeing that we didn't see 6 months ago? And when you do that, it's a lot easier to just let yourself try something, give it your best shot, and then keep moving forward and get some feedback, and then move on to what those customers are saying that they really need and identifying those pain points, rather than just saying, okay, we've arrived, we made this perfect product.
You know, that's a really great point, Joe. And I'm glad that you mentioned that school sets us up to try to be perfect before we launch anything, because I think it's a huge hurdle for people to overcome.
Yeah, completely. And I think that what happens is that we buy into that we think that we shouldn't do anything unless it's perfect. So what we end up doing is we only take on challenges that we know we can do really, really well. And especially like being a firstborn, my wife's a firstborn, both my parents are firstborns. Firstborns in particular, we find in the research, oftentimes they only take on challenges that they know they can do really well at until they can break through that mindset of saying, wait a second, I need to like put myself out there, fail a little bit. And then when you can get through that mindset and stop getting paralyzed by perfection, that's where you see this extreme growth, where you break out of that plateau.
Wow. And are there any tips that you can offer that you've learned about once you get into this mindset of trying something, experimenting, learning how to improve it and taking the next step? Are there any tips you can offer about how to then take something that is working and really scale it in a big way?
Yeah. So over the last probably 6 months or so, I've really been thinking through, like, what is it that I do on a regular basis to be successful in the things that I'm trying that are new? And I've identified seven practices of the practice. And so my website's Practice of the Practice. So what are the seven practices that I do on a regular basis with every single project? And so at first, what I do is I kind of evaluate where I'm at. I take stock of kind of the past, the present, and the future. What's worked? Where's the low-hanging fruit? And then after I evaluate, the second practice is that I define whether or not I'm starting something new or I'm growing something that's established. I think so often people don't even ask themselves, is this something that's established? Because if it's established and you're growing it, that's going to be a much different strategy than if you're starting something brand new. So evaluate, define, and then next it's plan core items. And so what I do is I chunk out that idea into kind of core phases and then give really kind of quick bullet points under each one, like down to like almost like 5 minute little segments that's going to keep moving that needle forward. So that if I have a client that no shows, if I find myself at a meeting and somebody's running late, I know exactly what I need to do next. And I'm not planning out the entire thing. I'm kind of saying in this first core section, what do I need to do? I need to get this lead page up. I need to get this automated sequence going. I need to, like, whatever those next steps are that I can do in 5 to 10 minute segments. So evaluate, define, plan, and then I'm really starting to create content around that new idea or that growth idea. And so creating blog posts, creating podcasts, creating connections with people out there that is going to support that through content. And then that next phase is going to be attracting partners. So who are the natural partners that are going to help me grow that e-course, that are going to help me grow that new consulting angle, that's going to help me grow that new product? So then after I attract partners, then really looking at serving the client well. And so I try to over-deliver, I try to exceed expectations. So really kind of the metaphor as we're going into that sixth and seventh step, the seventh step I'll talk about in just a second. If you think about kind of a mountain, that first part of that, these seven steps, you're going up that mountain. And then when you're at the like creating content, attracting partners and serving the client, you're kind of at the top of the mountain. And then that seventh practice is outsourcing the non-essentials. And so you're kind of coming down from that goal. And that's where I see a lot of people that they will take on a new goal, they'll get something going, and then they'll take on another goal. They don't accurately evaluate what is non-essential for my involvement here. Like for example, doing individual consulting, I have to show up for that. That's pretty essential if someone has paid to do consulting with Joe. But the scheduling, the acquisition, the follow-up, a lot of that I can outsource to somebody else. And so evaluating what are the non-essentials I can outsource, I have that as that seventh step when you're kind of coming down from that mountain.
Yeah, I think actually that seventh step is really powerful. And a lot of people, you're right, a lot of people don't do that. And then they get stuck really sort of like in a hamster wheel.
Yeah, because you know, as entrepreneurs, we get excited about our new ideas. And if you don't find how to take things off of your plate, you just have more on your plate. You get stressed. Your family doesn't see you. For me, it's been really important to have time with my 5-year-old and my 2-year-old and to support my wife, who's a stay-at-home mom, for her to be able to have time away from the kids. Like last night, she went sailing and, you know, raced with some friends. And I want to have the emotional energy to take those kids and have fun and be a quality father. And so for me, that looks like working 3 days a week, being highly efficient during that Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to get as much done during that period of time so that on my 4-day weekends, I can really take the time to be with my family, be with my friends, and kind of re-energize for that next week.
That's really powerful.
Yeah.
So, Joe, how did you learn that there are these steps and what kind of help have you gotten along the way?
Yeah, you know, really for me, it goes back to 2012. So in 2012, I was still working my full-time job at a community college. I had this little side website I was working on, starting the podcast. And that year, my daughter, she was almost 1 year old. She had to have open heart surgery. And about 2 weeks after, she got the all clear from that, which was like a year-long process of getting to finally do the heart surgery. She had to get up to a certain weight. I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. My mom had a heart attack. My wife had a miscarriage. And like our whole family just was like, I mean, we've all had those 2012s. And we were just treading water. Like we were sinking and treading water and like just barely getting by. But during that time, I had to ask myself, if I'm going to go work on a podcast, if I'm going to go work on a blog, if I'm going to show up for a counseling private practice appointment, why am I doing that instead of hanging out with my daughter who's going to have open heart surgery in a couple weeks? Why am I doing that instead of hanging out with my wife when I'm going through all of this treatment for cancer? Why am I doing that instead of going to the hospital to visit my mom? So those were really important questions that at the time, I mean, I would never want anyone to go through that, but it made me always ask the question of what's moving the needle forward, what's helping me make progress in my business, and how is that bottom line helping my family to move forward in our own economic goals? And so I think that what happened was through a really tough period of time, it took all that kind of wasted time out of the equation, and I never really went back. I asked myself, why am I doing email right now? Is this really moving the needle forward and focusing on the emails that will move the needle forward versus just, you know, I'm stuck on Facebook for 3 hours and fall into this deep, dark black hole.
Right. And are there resources or kinds of individual help that you've found have really help put these pieces together for you, besides just going through a tough, really tough year in lots of ways and taking the time to think about what's really important? There are certain techniques that are part of what you do now that clearly you've developed, and I can see how they can be transformational for anybody who is in a practice.
I think everybody has to be continually learning. And, you know, we know from the research, everyone learns in different ways. And so that may be individual coaching, it may be group coaching, it may be books or podcasts. For me, I have some close friends that we're all kind of around the same phase. And so we've done kind of coaching with each other because we each have different strengths. And so Kelly Higdon, she's a business coach that I highly respect. She also has a 5-year-old daughter, so we can vent about parenting to each other as well. So I would say she's probably one of the biggest inspirations in my life that has continued to help push me as well. I consume Don Miller's Story Brand podcast. That's been a huge influence on me. Pat Flynn's podcast. Also, the book Smart Cuts and the Power Power of Habit. Those are two books, as well as The One Thing, that have really inspired me just in my own personal growth.
That's great. And what kind of help do you think is most needed for an organization to smash a plateau?
Yeah, I think that organizations have to first oftentimes work with someone outside of their organization, because they've created such a culture within it that it's oftentimes hard to step out of that culture. So that could be a consultant, that could be a group of consultants. For organizations, there's usually three phases that I see them go through. So the first one is really, like, honestly identifying the culture that's happening, to look at what their bottom line is. Usually they're doing too many things and they don't have a clear focus. When you think about when JFK said, we're going to land a man on the moon by the end of this decade, that gave the entire nation a focus. And organizations oftentimes don't have that focus. So I'd say the second phase I often see is that they find some sort of unifying focus. So that may be, we're going to cut our products in half. We're going to do half as many products, but we're going to do them twice as well. We're going to serve customers differently. And then looking at then how do you create those teams would usually be the third phase that I see, where there's people that really own that process, that are able to work together to kind of smash that plateau.
Yeah. I think identifying the culture is really huge. I've seen too often people in organizational leadership say they want to change, but they're not really aware of what is going on in their own culture that is impeding change and improvement, and how their own personal behavior is sending signals about the culture to everybody in the organization. So that's a huge one. I can totally resonate with that. And when you talked about having a clear, narrow focus, it made me think of Apple when they cut their product line down to 7 products, which seemed very risky at the time, but we know from history that it was
we know
really
how that went.
Yeah, it went pretty well for Apple.
Yeah, yeah. I just actually, about a month ago, finished Steve Jobs' biography, the big, gigantic one, and it was fascinating to see kind of that whole process of just removing all the stuff that wasn't working.
Yeah, and one of the questions that I like to ask is, what's the one problem that you solve? If you can kind of identify one problem, that helps create focus. It also, I think, can get everybody on board to really do. Also, you mentioned the book, The One Thing, so it can get everybody on board to work around one thing that has a chance to propel the business forward significantly.
Yeah, and David, I love that you bring that up, because I think that so often businesses, like their mission statement or their vision statement, is something that their own staff doesn't even connect with. And so really identifying that problem, but then also saying, well, what's the outcome of our product? So even if you're just, say you're selling real estate, like, you're giving people their first home, you're helping people create a house that they can raise their kids in and create lasting memories. Like, that's a really big deal. But a lot of, even say, real estate agents are just like, well, I just sell homes. But what would a company look like if they really said, well, what's the impact of our product and what's the outcome when people use it? That can be, if it's put in just regular everyday language, so inspiring for staff and for people that are involved with that company.
Yes. And it certainly changes the way people think about a particular brand big time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Are there other examples or stories that you've seen of organizations that have gone through some of these steps you just mentioned that have helped them smash a plateau?
Yeah, you know, I think that for me, because I work mostly with small businesses, I think about some of the clients that I work with. One of the things that happens most in small businesses that I've observed is that the leader has often been very inspirational. They have launched something, they're passionate about it, but then how do they pass that inspiration on to other organizations? Onto other people within their organization. And so what happens is you have this inspirational person, there's kind of a handful of people that come on, and then it becomes this organization or this kind of institution that loses that original energy. I mean, you see this, you know, in any sort of kind of world movement, that there's some inspirational leader, whether it's religions or politics, and then they have a group of disciples that try to mimic that person. And then as you go farther and farther away from that person, it kind of becomes institutionalized. And so I think that's a huge problem in small businesses, where how do you pass on that energy? And what often happens is that original founder is so scared to let go of different aspects of the business because only I can do it this way. I'm the only one that can do it this way. And if you're the only one that can do it that way, you aren't teaching people well enough. And so what I encourage original founders to do is to bring people onto different aspects and let them have genuine control over certain aspects of the business where they're able to take it on, they're able to set the vision for it, they're able to fail and really kind of proceed until they're apprehended. Like just run full tilt in that direction, get creative with it, and then what you see is a lot of that original energy gets passed on to kind of that next tier of people.
That's actually a great way to describe it. So along those lines, Joe, who do you know personally who has been who's done a remarkable job of smashing a plateau?
Yeah, so I mentioned my friend Kelly Higdon, and she's the one that immediately comes to mind. Several years ago, she was a counselor in private practice, kind of doing agency work, and she and her business partner, Miranda, have totally smashed the plateau. They run an e-course it's more than an e-course. It's a community for counselors called Business School Bootcamp that for them has totally changed their economic lives, but they also have such influence in the counseling community. That they've smashed the plateau, they've gone into the sky, and like they're just on a whole different level than other business consultants that I see.
That's a great example. And focusing on you for a minute, what are you working on now? What do we have to look forward to from Joe?
Yeah, so right now I'm kind of developing these seven practices into my own course. So that's going to come out probably sometime in the next year. But I'd be happy to give away. I have a training that's all about how to move from being paralyzed by perfection to getting things done. It's a 19-minute training video with a 19-page download. Usually it's $19, but I'd be happy to give it to your audience for free. They can access that over at practiceofthepractice.com/perfection. And then I also have a handful of sessions that I'm doing with consulting with people that have small businesses that are more in the service-oriented business, and they can access information about that free 30-minute consult at practiceofthepractice.com/consulting.
That's great. So we'll include those in the show notes for anybody who didn't catch them quickly enough.
And Joe, yeah, sometimes I'm like a fire hose, and that's I've just embraced the fire hose-ness of myself.
Hence the importance of having show notes along with the podcast.
Exactly.
Well, Joe, how can listeners learn more about you?
Yeah, probably the best way is to head on over to practiceofthepractice.com. Even though it's aimed at counselors in private practice that are planning, starting, and growing a private practice, really it connects with anyone that has a small business. We talk about marketing. I have at least once a week podcast. Oftentimes I'll do a like 5-day series on a specific topic. So practiceofthepractice.com, that's where I kind of house all my articles, podcasts, and connections.
Sounds great. Well, Joe, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. You shared some great tips about how people who have practices like yours and the ones you help can smash the plateau, and also how business in general can smash the plateau. Great tips. So thanks again for joining us. My guest today has been speaker, mental health counselor, business consultant, and podcaster Joe Sanok.
Thanks
again
so much,
Joe,
David,
for joining us. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. Have you ever hit a plateau in your own life or career? If so, let's talk. It would be my pleasure to take you through one of our free half-hour discovery sessions where we'll get to the bottom of what might be keeping you stuck and how to move things forward. Just give me a call at 212-731-0770. That's 212-731-0770. You never know what you might find out.